and a letter to my mummy. On the way I dropped it, I dropped it, I dropped it. Yes, on the way I dropped it.
We've shared this statistic before, but it bears repeating. The average American museum displays less than 5% of its collection at any given time. That leaves a lot unseen and plenty to work with. Willena Quiton, currently the Mellon Fellow for Native Art at Philbrook, was recently asked to shine a light on a specific area of the museum's collection, baskets. That work led to the current exhibition, Interwoven, Cherokee, Muscogee Creek, and Yuchi Baskets, presenting a variety of styles, both decorative and functional, made from a wide range of materials. Interwoven runs through February 8th. You may never look at a basket quite the same way. We recently sat down with Willena to talk all about it. From Philbrook Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential. All right, Willena, welcome to Museum Confidential. We're excited to have you on the show to talk about Interwoven. Baskets are a pretty wide-ranging field. There's a lot of different pieces that fall into this show. You know, it might at first glance seem like one thing, but there's so many variations and styles that go into this. What was the kind of seed that, you know, began this idea for this show?
Well, the seed was really director of exhibitions asked if I would do a basket exhibition.
So we have a lot of baskets, yes, in the collection that oftentimes are, you know, not front and center in what we're doing. So you got this kind of directive of like, let's do something with the baskets.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Philbrook has a permanent collection of baskets from Clark Field and a couple other collectors like Roberta Lawson, Frank Speck, that the period is early 1900s to, well, up until present day, but the large portion of them are on the mid-1900s, the 1940s to 50s. And I do believe it's one of the largest collections in the United States. Not the largest, but one of them.
Quite robust.
Yes, it's quite robust. So a lot of people come here to do research. There has been books written on this collection, or they're highlighted, you know, in another collection, or they get asked to. We get asked for loans a lot on these baskets.
I think there's oftentimes a lot of confusion between, we hear the word arts and crafts, and we don't know necessarily the delineation between that blurred line. You know, what is craft? What is art? Oftentimes they can maybe be both at the same time. And sometimes for things like baskets or certain textiles, it gets quite blurry for the average person. How do you kind of think of the line between those two things, if there even is one?
I do think it is different for Native art. What you're saying, that blurred line is there. But in the definitions and in Western art, art is conceptual, you know, it's a conceptual expression, it evokes emotion, it contains lots of ideas, whereas craft focuses on skill, traditions, techniques, which basketry falls into all of that, into craft specifically. But, when you start maybe weaving in designs in there, then that really falls into, you know, art. And so that's where that line is blurred. It's not just basketry, but a lot of our other art forms, Native art forms, we really don't fit in a box, in a specific definition.
That like pottery, for example.
Exactly. It's kind of the same thing as basketry. It can also be, it could be the same because maybe the designs, decorations, embellishments that are included within it or on it.
When you look at the baskets in this show, were they meant for use originally? Are they, and that's kind of where we, touch on this thing, sometimes meant just for it to be an object of beauty versus meant for a utilitarian purpose? Or is it kind of a mix of the two?
It is a specific mix, specifically. And I did that intentionally. We have two Yuchi baskets and two Creek baskets that are, I would say, fall into the category of craft. And especially the two Yuchi baskets, they, and you can tell just by looking at them visually, that they were heavily used and reused, and they were fixed. They were repaired so they could be used again. And then we also have these Creek baskets, four of them, that were used in food processing. However, I don't believe they were used in the actual processing of food. I think maybe they were, well, you know, I'm not sure because we weren't there, you know.
But they don't appear as if they'd been used.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. You know, they look brand new still.
They don't have that kind of
however, warm. Somebody could have made them for that purpose, but then the collector went and bought this, you know, specific collection of baskets that were used for that food processing.
And then just decided, basically, you know, we want to keep these pristine.
Yes. And then they ended up in our collection, and they're just art now.
Yeah. I guess we get to decide in some ways.
Yeah. But there's a lot of the Cherokee baskets, they can be discussed differently. They did enter the economy early for, they entered the market specifically for, to make money.
These people. Meant to be sold.
Yes. You know, just like anyone else, you know, they have to make a living, they have to feed their family. And so, you know, they turned their forms of basketry into art forms. And then therefore it becomes a different usage for it. It's not utilitarian. It's kind of for specific art purposes.
Is there a way, and you know, kind of a succinct way to think about the differences between, say, a Cherokee, a Muskogee, and a Yuchi basket? Are the differences very stark in terms of what makes, you know, one Yuchi specifically, and what makes one Cherokee? Is it just aesthetically? Is it technique? How do you see the differences?
That is kind of a hard question. It's all in one because they share a lot of the techniques. And they share a lot of designs. However, Cherokee baskets use more designs in them. And that's also when it becomes, you know, an art form, they will start using more designs within the baskets. Their technique may be a little bit more pristine.
More skilled.
Yes, yeah. More intricate, maybe more perfect. You know, maybe they cut their splints perfectly, you know. Maybe they're conscious about the dyes that they use because they want to use this color or this color.
And that's Cherokee specifically?
It can be all of them, yeah. But Cherokee specifically, and more so. And especially within the just the record in kind of the history of basketry, you see that in collections. Like, okay. This is kind of when it changed
around this time period.
Yeah, you can see. You can see it when you start looking at baskets and collections. You can see that change happening. And, but yeah, Creeks and Yuchis, I do believe they their baskets kind of remained utilitarian throughout time. And it still is kind of the same. And actually, you really don't see a whole lot of basketry in Muskogee Creek and Yuchi people, and Yuchi culture anymore. It's not...
It's kind of just died out, that practice?
It has. I mean, I don't want to say that entirely because that's not entirely true. I do know there are people who do that, but you don't see it as much as you do in Cherokee culture.
And is there a specific reason for that? Is it because of the kind of way, say, different tribes have been able to utilize different markets and kind of find ways to sell these items and in different ways that it kind of keeps the market alive for basket? I don't know. What would be the reason for that?
I do think, yes, part of that is that reason. But it's also just an introduction to new materials, too, you know, where you're at. We look at where removal, you know, is at, too, for these people. You know, you look at where Muscogee Creek people are, Nu-Chi people today. There are Nu-Chi people around Kellyville, Sepulpa, kind of around Duck Creek area. I mean, I know there's you know, growth there, but maybe not as much as, like, say, where around Cherokee County and where Cherokee people live today in Oklahoma. You know, there's a lot of waterways there, so there's river cane, which was a traditional material that they brought over from the Trail of Tears or from the homelands in North Carolina. But there was also an introduction for Cherokee people for other materials as well, like buckbrush, honeysuckle, Japanese willows.
All of those are represented in the show in some way?
Yes. And actually, those three things are represented here on the grounds, too. I found them on the grounds within our, you know, Phil Brooks
area. Maybe we should make some baskets out of our stuff. Because of the, obviously, organic nature of these materials, are baskets particularly hard to maintain and preserve over a long period of time? Do they break down, or you know, what's
actually a lot of them don't. They keep really well, I think. And even in a personal collection, I know my mom has some, and I have some. I guess it just depends on the use, you know. I mean, if you have it sitting there on a shelf for a long time, it is going to stay. But the only thing that happens is it gets dirty, you know. There might be some discoloration if you keep it in a window, or if you've just had it for a really long time,
or if you use it
exactly,
a lot,
or like if you
for
use it a lot.
Purpose.
Yeah, you know. I know river cane's a little bit more heavier and it's more heavy duty. It's used a lot traditionally because it maintained, or it was okay to use, like, around heat that I've read. You know, it's important to also, I am not a basket expert. I do want to say this around everything. You know, my areas of interest and the collections that I have worked with is kind of Southern Plains material culture. And just baskets kind of wasn't my jam, to be honest.
But you're just widening your aperture.
So. I am. So I've learned a lot, you know. I'm not the expert here.
Kind of cool
so
to go through a process like this and kind of get to know a lot more about it.
And what helped, too, is that, I wanted to say this earlier, is, you know, we did a basket inventory. So everything was really fresh in my head when I was asked to do
as
a basket exhibition.
Show, which features about,
like,
how many
kind of
baskets?
Towards the end. I believe this focuses on like 22.
And I should say, you know, aside from kind of different tribal representation, different materials represented in the baskets, the sizes are quite stark too, because we have baskets that are like the size of like a thimble almost, right?
Yes.
Some of the smallest baskets I've ever seen.
Yes, and we have even smaller than that.
Smaller than a thimble.
Yes.
I mean, what was the reasoning for that kind of miniature? Was it just to see how small you could make the basket? Was it for dioramas and, you know, kind of displaying in a certain way at scale? Like, it's interesting to think why someone would feel compelled to do that.
I think it became something for, the market.
Because it almost
something
looks like dollhouse
fun.
Type
yes,
size furniture.
Exactly. And in fact, I use them in my dollhouse as well.
There you go. Okay.
And some of my dioramas,
I would
actually.
It becomes, I would imagine at that scale, the intricacy of the weave becomes even harder.
Yes.
So maybe there's a
and
challenge
then therefore
component
it
to
is.
It.
And then therefore it's skill. Mm. It's a skill level that's shown. You know, it's like, oh, wow, look at this, you know.
Kind of like when you see beading at a certain scale. Like, it's just like, you know, you'd have to almost have like a jeweler's loop to kind of see the tiny little, you know, details of all
that.
Yeah,
so I just wanted to bring those out, you know, for something
they're
fun
pretty
so
fun
people
to
can see.
See. And they kind of almost function like nesting dolls, right?
Mm-hmm.
They kind of fit almost like
inside. Some of them
other.
Do.
This episode of Museum Confidential is sponsored by one of our longtime supporters, text panels. You know, those little square or rectangular things on the wall right next to works of art, kind of like a caption next to a photograph, from short and simple to verbose and dense. There's a wide variety of text panels in museums around the world. So the next time you see something and you want to know more, just look around for that text panel. It's the best and quickest way we know of to get from WTF to OMG.
When you think about a show like this, and the average person might think, seen one basket, seen them all. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of thread a narrative through the show? You know, like, are you trying to tell a story of any kind? Is it mostly about chronology? You know, mm-hmm. what are you trying to tell the audience when they come see this?
Well, specifically the title, Interwoven, mm-hmm. you know.
A pun of sorts.
Exactly. I wanted everyone to notice and to see, to recognize that, you know, our Tulsa community is interwoven with lots of rich histories, different peoples, and this includes Muscogee Creek, Cherokee, and Yuchi people that are neighboring,
yeah,
you know,
local.
Within the communities.
These are
our local people here. And I wanted visibility for our people and for these people, you know, for young people as well, to see themselves. I know, like I said before, Muscogee Creek basketry isn't that common in, in culture today, as well as in museum collections. And so I wanted to bring that out, as well as Yuchi baskets. I wanted to bring that out for the people here.
It's not in the show, but I would say one of our kind of centerpieces of our entire collection is a basket by an artist, Dot Solali. Am I saying that right?
I'm not sure.
And so we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started working here, thinking about kind of these pillars of our collection, and one of them was this this basket, which has been featured on, you know, U.S. postage stamps, and I think over the decades it's traveled the world, you know, to mm-hmm. different exhibitions and things like this. And then, you know, when we mentioned pottery earlier, we've done shows with people like Maria Martinez, for example, like some of that black on black, and, you know, her work transcends, you know, even, you know, it's shown in, you know, modern art shows, it's alongside all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Artists like Rose Simpson are doing, you know, cars mm-hmm. based on her work. So some things kind of break out. Are there any, you know, these basket artists that have kind of broken out as kind of standalone artists, even outside of their chosen field of basketry, where they do something design-wise that just seems so different or unique or modern, using the style mm-hmm. of weaving or basketry, that it just kind of took them somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. Well, within this show specifically, I would say that it would be Shan Goshorn, Eastern Band Cherokee, but you know, made her home here in Tulsa, and she's the one that really leveled up in basketry, you know, bringing it into a contemporary level, using her various techniques and different techniques, you know, rather than traditional materials of natural materials. She used archival papers, x-rays, facsimiles, things like that.
Text, you know, there's so much like text-based stuff woven in there.
Yes.
You know, kind of message-based, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I should say she passed several years ago, too early, unfortunately.
Yes.
But her work has kind of just even grown, as it mm-hmm. often does after someone that talented passes away, has grown and is shown all over the world. But yeah, that's a great example of what you mentioned, the art that was obviously meant to be, a basket that was meant to be from day one, seen as a, you know, mm-hmm. her baskets are not necessarily something you'd want to take out into the backyard and use to gather some firewood or anything like that. But that's a great example that, you know, there's a modernism to those things mm-hmm. In there as well. But obviously kind of hearkening back to a tradition. Are these skills that people learn to weave baskets and create these pieces often passed down from one generation to another? Or is this something, can you go to school and learn how to do this? Or is
both.
It usually, you
it's
know,
both.
A family tradition?
It's both. Take Shan, for instance. She taught herself. She's self-taught, you know,
impressive.
And that was because of her will and her want to do that. And then you do have others who are legacy basket makers, you know, and who have been making baskets throughout 5-10 generations, you know, within their family. You see that a lot over in Cherokee, North Carolina, with the Eastern Band. You know, we have one specifically that's also kind of highlighted. It kind of sits in the center of everything. Nancy Bradley, she's one of my favorites, you know, throughout doing this exhibition and seeing all these baskets. She's become my favorite.
So that's someone you mentioned, obviously, you're not a basket expert. So you kind of got to fan out a little bit on some of these and learn some, you know, new connections and see people that you may not be familiar with. So why was she someone that stuck out for you for this?
Oh, just the skill level. Everything is perfect. The precision. Her splints are just perfect.
It's almost mathematical. Perfectly. You know?
Yes. And there is a lot of math to it. And I know a basket maker could talk more to this than I can right now. But there is,
there's levels there's a science of math to it, right?
Yes.
It's kind of this weird thing where...
Then I also think that it just, you know, you may have to think about those numbers at first, but then after you get going, it's, you know, it just becomes a natural movement for them, you know, once they start going. And
almost like a muscle memory.
Yes, it's exactly. And everything was just perfect with her baskets.
Yeah.
And that's why everything is just so beautiful. And even the river cane, the quality of it is beautiful as well. You know, there is a big difference in, you know, a basket that you see that was made of maybe the late 1800s, early 1900s, than say a basket, you know, made in 2000s, even out of river cane. There is a difference in the quality of that material, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I mean, these kinds of things, you can marvel at the beauty of the object. You can also kind of marvel at the, I think sometimes we often think like, man, how long did that take? The skill level, all those things come into play when you see it. There's almost like an architecture to a basket, you know, that beyond that. Before we wrap up, I'm curious to know, you know, if you can give us a teaser of, you know, like, what might be next, something you might be working on. Because you said you're not a basket person. Are you diving into any other areas that you're kind of a little bit new to? Or are you going to be working more in the space that you're more comfortable with on future shows? Like, what's going to be coming up for you in the next years?
As far as Philbrook goes, I have not been told yet. I have not, you know, a directive or anything, so that's hard to answer.
Yeah.
You know, I also do NAGPRA work, and so that is a big thing
as
well.
Yeah, I mean, we could do a whole show on...
Exactly. So that's what I'm diving into.
I mean, this is, you know, kind of decolonizing the museum space and returning pieces to their rightful owners and going through that...
A federal process.
I guess it's kind of a repatriation, but within one country, right? Within, the, you know, these are, you know, native objects that were maybe gathered or taken, stolen, bought, whatever the term is, and maybe in unclear ways, and we're trying to kind of get these objects back. That's fascinating work, and we should definitely talk about
that. And in fact, that does have to do with this basket exhibition, too.
Are there baskets in this show that would be kind of falling into that space?
One of the new provisions, though, of NAGPRA that came out.
Can you say what NAGPRA means?
Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act.
Yeah.
It was enacted, established in 1993. Mm. And yes, and what you had said that.
That's a big project.
Yes, a big
but
project.
Important. Well, good. Well, maybe we need to have a part two at some point and talk about that.
Yeah. But part of that is, you know, one of the new provisions states that any material culture, you need to have a consultation, you know, with these tribes before you put anything on exhibition. And so, you know, part of me starting here is also, you know, let's get this institution on track with that, with these provisions and NAGPRA. And so that was part of it. It would be easy because we're around here, you know, Tulsa, to have consultations with Muscogee Creek, Cherokee Nation, as well as, well, Uchi falls under Muscogee Creek. So, but I also had to consult with the Eastern Band And we had to do that really fast to, you know, get the okay. If we didn't get the okay, you know, we could have been...
Yeah, you want to do it now.
We don't want to do
ways.
That. Yeah, we don't want to, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we hope everybody will come see this. It's on view now, and it will be for a little while, but not forever. So make an effort to get out to the museum
February
and see
8th.
It. Get out to the museum, see these amazing baskets. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you. Appreciate this. Thank you.
At a recent handbag auction at Christie's in New York City, a Chanel bag created to look like a grocery store handbasket and made entirely from silver and lambskin leather established a world auction record for a Chanel handbag at a price of, wait for it, $152,400. It remains unclear whether it will be displayed as a work of art or used to pick up a few items at the local farmers market. Well, that's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory in the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. To learn more about the station or the museum, visit publicradiotulsa.org or philbrook.org or both. As always, we suggest both. Until next time, look closer.